I will call this meeting the Board of Directors to order. The time is 5:30 p.m. And we always start with the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm going to ask Director Meeks, Mayor Pro Tem Meeks, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Jung.
Director Jung is present.
Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Sheldon.
Present.
Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Yeo. You do have a quorum with 9 directors present.
Great. Mr. General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Great. Now's the time for visitor participation. If anyone would like to address us on items that are not listed on tonight's agenda, you may do so now. I see no hands up online, and I have no speaker cards. So we will be moving on. That brings us to item number one, which is a public hearing on OCWD vacancies and recruitment efforts. And I will open the public hearing and ask staff to address us at this time.
Yeah, Mr. President, HR Director David Alba will give this presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, Mr. President, and esteemed members of the board. I'm here tonight to present the AB 2561 annual presentation to you. So this is the second year that you've received it, but I wanted to give you a brief reminder of what this presentation was about. AB 2561 was signed into law in 2024. Oh, thank you. I'm not sharing.
Sharing is caring.
I swear I haven't. There it is. One extra click. I was one click away. Thank you. So it was signed into law in 2024 and went into effect in January of 2025. It amends Section 3502 of the Government Code, commonly known as the Myers-Milius-Brown Act, which governs employee-employer relations in the public sector. This particular law is intended to address the high vacancy rates that exist in some public agencies, thankfully not here. The law requires that local agencies, including special districts, present at least once a year on the status of vacancies, recruitment, and retention efforts in a public hearing. It must be done at least once per fiscal year, and it has to be done prior to the adoption of any budget. And since we're getting knee-deep into that process, we wanted to make sure that we got out in front of it and did it today. Last year, we received this same presentation on April 2nd, so we're lining up pretty well. There are some special requirements within the law that say if we have vacancy rates that exceed 20% of our full-time authorized positions, that we have to provide additional information. Thankfully, you will see that we do not meet that threshold, so we don't have to provide that additional information. So my agenda tonight will be to review our vacancy information with you, including our current vacancy rates and the reasons for our existing vacancies. I know this presentation always begs that question. We're going to talk briefly about our recruitment efforts and current recruitment status and where we might be able to make some changes with our hiring processes. First, the number of current vacancies. We have 10 vacancies across the entire district. 9 of them are within our represented employees association. This is historically actually pretty high for us. We don't usually have this many going at one time, but you can see even with these current vacancies, we're at about 4.5%. Our current vacancy rate. So then, of course, that begs the question, why do we have these vacancies? So we have collected data on the current vacancies and why we have them. 3 of them were voluntary resignations. 3 of them were retirements. We consider retirements a good thing. That's good churn. We love when people spend their careers here and retire with us. 2 of them were the result of internal promotions. So we are growing from within when we have the opportunity to do so. And one is a new classification, which, by the way, I just found out at about 4:30 today that we will be filling. So that's one less vacancy we'll have on the books. And then we have one scientist position that was added for PFAS monitoring that is currently unstaffed. You know, we're seeing Gallup release their poll this week, the State of the Workplace survey, and they were saying that there are three big things that are driving turnover right now. It's pay, growth, and leadership. We don't collect specific exit interview data for our employees right now, though we know that two of the three who took voluntary resignations took positions with other agencies or other organizations, so that may be lending to it here. We are looking at refining our exit interview practices so we can divine a little more information from our exiting employees. Here's the current status of the recruitments. You can see we're accepting applications for three of these positions, interviewing for three of the positions, one of which we just found out again today is going to be filled. We have two that are actually starting next week, so those will be filled as well. And then we have two that are currently pending the recruitment posting. So they have not been open to accept applications yet, but they are in the review process. In terms of hiring information, the law requires that we review our hiring and retention practices. So we reviewed all of our policies, procedures, and recruitment activities to identify if there were any significant obstacles in our hiring process. And we did not identify any significant obstacles. Like any public agency, we have a relatively long time to hire that has to do with our open interview process, our recruitment processes, and of course, our background processes and onboarding. We're doing pretty well relative to the public sector. We're lagging a little behind the private sector in terms of that time, though we have been implementing a few changes to try and speed that up. One of those is that we've moved to NeoGov's onboard platform, which allows our new employees to conduct all of their pre-hire processes and paperwork on a virtual basis instead of having to come in and make in-person appointments to do it. Happy to say I was onboarded using that process, and the process actually went very well. We're still a very high-touch organization. We call our applicants, we talk to them in person whenever we can, but we've given them this option to fill out their paperwork so they can do it nights, weekends, and a temporary time so they're not having to wait for an appointment to be available here. And we've probably shaved about a week off of the onboarding process based on that. Beyond that, I think we're doing pretty well. The law actually requires that our employee associations can speak to the matter as well. And you may know we have some members of the employee association here, including the representatives from the Orange County Employees Association, who would like to speak on the matter. But first, I'd like to give you the opportunity to ask any questions you may have before I turn over the microphone.
Are there any questions from directors? I can see the online. Okay. I hear no questions at this time. Oh, wait.
I'll ask.
Please do.
Thank you for the presentation. In terms of the time period from submission of the paperwork until hiring, you mentioned that public agencies took a little longer vis-a-vis the private sector.
Correct.
On average, and this is on average, every case obviously is different, but on average, how long does it take for an applicant or a potential applicant to submit paperwork and then went through the interview process and then get hired?
Great question, Director Tran. I appreciate that. In the private sector, we typically see about a 30-day turnaround. You know, there's wide variances across different industries based on what the hiring process is, what the position is. If I walked into a McDonald's tomorrow and submitted an application, I may be hired on the spot. For more professional level positions, there's obviously a longer lead time. Public sector tends to run more than 60 days on average across their hiring. We set a very, very long timeline of up to 90 days, depending on the level of the position, though typically we finish our recruitments. And this is from the initiation of the recruitment with the hiring manager through what I like to call butt in seat, if you'll pardon my language. We run about 45 to 50 days for that. So we're running a little bit faster than the public sector on average, still lagging the private sector.
If I may do a follow-up, that kind of begs the question. And this is kind of a mystery to me, or at least at the policy level here. And again, it's a general question because every every position is specific and it requires specific skills and experience and all of that. But can you give us a number of application? For example, if I if OCWD posts basically a job offer for a vacancy for a staff accountant, on average, for those positions that are still vacant, how many applications do we receive as an agency? And when what's the hiring rate percentage on average for all of these applications?
Certainly, I'm gonna.
And we don't have those data. I mean, you would have that. I'd like how difficult it is, or how easy is it to get hired onto our agency?
I'm happy to say we don't seem to have an attraction issue. We're getting sufficient numbers of applicants for most of our recruitments. But to answer your deeper question, how long does it take? And then how many applicants are we getting for those positions? In terms of the number of applicants, unfortunately, I have to say it depends, because we have some very senior level, very specialized positions here at the district. And it's, you know, we're essentially poaching from other water agencies or hoping we get lucky with the timing. We've got one position in hydrogeology right now that's been very difficult to fill because there are so few qualified applicants. We're in the process for a natural resources director, which requires a very narrow set of skills. For positions like that, we tend to get a number of applications in the dozens, and we'll maybe qualify 6 to 8 of them for the hiring manager to review. That's not atypical. You'll find that with senior level engineering managers across different organizations and other specialized positions like that. If we're talking about something like a staff accountant, though, I anticipate we're going to get 80 to 90 applications for the staff accountant position. We'll screen through those and look for minimum qualifications, and it would be passed over to Mr. Fick and his team to determine who are the best qualified as the subject matter experts and who they want to interview. But for a panel like that, with that many qualified applicants, we'd probably end up interviewing 8 to 10 people and having our choice of those.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Any other questions at this time? Okay, this is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public that would like to provide testimony?
Guys, I'm not normally on crutches, so we're going to
need a microphone, I think. Just a moment. Actually, we have a very sophisticated system that can hear you.
And wanted to take a moment to introduce our Orange County Water District Employees Association Board. We're all standing behind me. For ease, I'm going to introduce them, and they're just going to kind of give you a little wave. So our president, Erin Marshall, actually could not be here tonight because she is welcoming a new baby. So she's out on maternity leave. However, she is the...
No, you're good. Thank you. She is the principal chemist and has worked at OCWD for 12 years. She ensures the laboratory meets and maintains California regulatory standards for drinking water and wastewater accreditation. Behind me, Tuan Nguyen is a chemist, and he is the OCWDEA vice president. He analyzes and verifies water quality through laboratory testing to ensure water used to replenish and protect Orange County's groundwater basin is safe, reliable, and compliant with regulatory standards. Michelle Boyd is an environmental specialist supervisor in the water quality department. She's in charge of the drinking water compliance monitoring program. She has 36 years of service at OCWD, and she has been on this union board as secretary for 20 years. Let's see, also on our board, he couldn't be here, but Joseph Newby, he's a senior I&E tech and makes sure the electrical system and the equipment function properly for the water district. Alejandro Benuelos, or Alex, Behind me, perfect. He is an assistant recharge system operator. He works over at Anaheim and is in charge of managing the Santa Ana River flows and managing the levels and flows into all of our recharge basins. Jaime Garcia, back there, he is a senior PCS programmer analyst and he maintains and upgrades the plant's control system and collaborates with all of the OCWD groups in maintaining the GWRS plant flow. And then Stan Vielma. He is actually on our night shift, so he's here right now, but not normally in person. But we thank him for being here. He's a water treatment operator too. He performs a variety of tasks associated with the operation, routine maintenance and repair, and upkeep of GWRS. I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to them and let you know, kind of in layman's terms, what they do here, because the work that they do is very, very important, and this district wouldn't function without them. As was said earlier, in 2024, California Government Code Section 3502.3 mandated that public agencies address their vacancies and discuss the measures being taken to fill them. Again, as said earlier, to this day, many jurisdictions are struggling with that challenge. Last year, we submitted a letter commending OCWD for its proactive efforts to recruit and retain top talent. And we're here again to do much of the same because that work has continued. And so we wanted to acknowledge that. As it stands, there are 9 vacancies within our represented unit with an active recruitment process underway for almost every one. As you saw earlier, even 2 employees are set to start on Monday. So that's great news. We appreciate the board and staff's continued attention to this issue. We also believe that we are currently have an exciting opportunity to elevate OCWD's standing as a top destination employer in the county and in Southern California in general. We're entering negotiations into a new con for a new contract, and we believe that the history of the last contract matters when we are talking recruitment and vacancies. So, wanted to just give a little bit of info there. The last time we negotiated, it was the height of the pandemic. I think the meetings were held in different rooms in this building. The two groups met over Zoom. Everyone in the room sat 6 feet apart from each other. But even so, we worked together to secure a long-term contract in a period of what was very much uncertainty, at that time. And then mid-contract, which is kind of unique to this district, this board recognized that retaining and attracting people, especially in a post-COVID world, required competitive wages and benefits. And this board acted accordingly. We believe that that decision to act is a big part of why we are here today in a position of progress, rather than struggle. OCWD employees are top quality. They love their jobs. They're proud of what they do. And that's just not something that you can manufacture. It comes from working somewhere that values your contribution and invests in your growth. That passion that the employees have, it shows up in the awards that this district continues to earn and in the stability of the water supply that serves more than 2.5 million Orange County residents. The work that the employees behind me and those who aren't here do every single day, it's quietly extraordinary. It's our community is better for, and it's the reason that we're able to function here in Orange County. That's exactly the kind of workforce that we think is worth protecting and building on, especially in this day and age with the recruitment struggles that other public agencies are having. As we head into this negotiations, we see a real opportunity to keep OCWD competitive, not just on paper, but as a place where talented people want to stay and build a career. And when employees feel respected and fairly compensated, they stay, they grow, and they bring others like them through the door, which I think is the goal here. So that said, we look forward to working together on this new contract and, you know, in the years beyond with this shared goal in mind, and appreciate the opportunity to address you tonight.
Thank you for your testimony. Would anyone else like to testify at this time? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. And the recommended action is to receive the comments. So do we need to take a vote on? Nope. Okay, well, thank you very much for participating tonight. And I just wanted to say that On behalf of the board, we do highly appreciate all of the staff's efforts, and we place a high value on recruiting and retaining the very best in the industry. And I believe that shows through the very low turnover that we have. We hope to maintain high morale here. And I personally am just so appreciative of everyone's efforts here. I'm always very, very impressed with the workforce here. Thank you. That will bring us to item number 2 through 4, which is the consent calendar. What is the pleasure of the board?
Move the consent calendar.
Ladies first.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Roll call, Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Jung?
Aye.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Weigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 10 yes votes.
Great, thank you. That brings us to informational items. First up is Prado Basin sedimentation trends based on LIDAR analysis.
Yes, Mr. President, we have some good news to share with the board. And we're going to have two employees tag team this presentation. We have Sean Neville and Zach Henderson. And who's first, guys?
Roy is watching. Better him than me. Good evening, Sean Neville. I'm with our planning department, and I'm here with Zach Henderson of our runs our RGIS program. We're going to talk today about some recent data and some findings on sedimentation in Prado Basin and the trends that we're starting to recognize. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on right now with our sediment obligations and some of our sediment removal activities. This is an informational item, so there's no action that's requested of the board tonight. So let's take a step back for a moment here. We first of all, in 2020, we had implemented a sediment removal project as part of our sediment demonstration project. It did a couple things. One is it identified it let us test some solutions for removal and conveyance of sediment. But probably more importantly for us today is it created a sediment excavation area that we call a sediment trap in the middle of Prado Basin. And so we now are obligated to do two removals. The larger of the two is part of a biological opinion that would require us to remove about 250,000 cubic yards of sediment from that exact same location. That's a lot of sediment. And we also have a smaller obligation to remove about 1,200 cubic yards every year for 5 years. And we're a couple years into that, and we do that sediment removal up at our diversion near our diversion for our wetlands near the River Road Bridge. So we're currently working towards the larger removal right now, and we'll give you a little update on that as well. So we are going to be doing that removal. We're hoping to begin that removal this year. We can only do so much at one time, so that'll be done in increments. The removal will take place at the sediment trap, and we will haul that across the basin to an offsite storage location, a stockpile location that is owned by the Orange County Flood Control District. We are securing a 10-year license agreement that would allow us to hold sediment there, and we expect to have that in place by May. We also are working with Army Corps of Engineers to get permitting. We have to haul the sediment across their roads. And so we're the current schedule today, we have received an update today, that we are expecting to have that done, the permitting done by August of this year. So that would really be the final step for us. and would allow us to begin sediment removals. And the hope is that we can at least begin that sediment removal this year. That would occur over several years. The idea, we'd stockpile it on this flood control-owned parcel, and it would allow outside entities an opportunity to come and take that sediment. It can be used for beach sand replenishment. It can be used for other public works projects. We've been working on alternatives and options for how we can remove and convey sediment offsite. We're looking at offsite parcels, which is what we're doing right now, but and opportunities for re-entrainment below Prado Dam. We're also working currently with UCI students, and we have some nice photos here, UCI students, to look at options for conveyance of sediment by rail. And the idea here is that they're looking for solutions for how we could find a way to get sediment onto using trains and get it to the coast and or other stockpile locations. So they're working on that project. We're hoping to have them wrap up by the end of their school year and give us a report on some of those options and what their findings are. So turning back to the data we're presenting today, you know, why is there sediment behind Prado Basin? And the answer is that every dam in the world has a sediment issue to some extent. The water that comes downstream carries its sediment load with it. It hits the dam, the pool of water behind the dam. It slows its velocity down. That sediment drops out. Eventually, the water moves on, but the sediment stays behind. And at first you may think, well, it's an Army Corps dam, it's an Army Corps facility. That sounds like an Army Corps problem, and you would be right to some extent. But it's an Orange County Water District problem as well, because we ask the Army Corps to hold back water and so that way we can release it slowly and capture it downstream at our Four Bay facilities. And that's what we consider to be our water conservation activities. When that sediment fills in, it reduces the amount of water that we can hold in that pool, the water conservation pool. So it's an issue for us, and it's something that we've been tracking for years. So we started taking LIDAR data and acquiring LIDAR data in recent years. And to remind everyone what LIDAR is, LIDAR, it's a device that you attach to a fixed wing aircraft. It pulses down laser and it measures the return on that laser. The result of that is an excellent set of very accurate data showing the ground surface elevation. So the great thing about the LIDAR data that we're acquiring is we didn't even acquire it for measuring sediment or ground surface. We measured it to look at the habitat and look at our vegetation growth over time. So it's been a windfall that we're getting this excellent set of data on sediment, just represents a great investment, I think, for Orange County Water District to acquire this data. We acquired LIDAR data in 2020. Army Corps did their own survey in 2021, and we did another survey in 2023 and last year. And we're looking to, I believe, do one this year and this summer as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Zach. Zach's going to tell us a little bit about what we found from that data.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. So before we really kind of dive in, I just want to kind of remind everyone what Prado Basin is, what we're looking at. Right. So Prado Dam is in the lower left-hand corner of this map. There's four major tributaries that contribute water and also sedimentation behind Prado Dam. So you're going to have Chino Creek, Cucamonga Creek, which turns into Mill Creek, the Santa Ana River, and Temescal Wash. So these are the four, drivers of water. You know, this is where the water kind of comes from, the Santa Ana River being the largest, right? There, it's in terms of volume and total amount of sediment, this is where most of the stuff is coming from the Santa Ana River. The yellow kind of polygon, that's OCWD's property. Just outside of that is Army Corps property, right? So, and we do have a great working relationship. As Sean said, we're sharing data. And one of the things that we found in sharing this data and looking at the sedimentation analysis is that, so let me back up a little bit. Let's take a bathtub analogy. That's always kind of nice, and it's because it's easy to comprehend. So in 1941, you have a very pristine bathtub. It's clean, right? You fill the water up to what we would call 508 elevation. So that's a certain elevation. So the bathtub is filled up. At that point, when dam first opened up in 1941, you have 1,000 acre feet of storage, water storage. Then over time, you lose storage due to sedimentation, due to change. And currently, we're going to fast forward to 2025, where we have about half, right? So initially, when we were looking at this analysis, you know, this loss of storage, we realized we were losing storage every single year until 2008, right? So you can see some of the more recent since 2008, and really since 2020, where we've had this LIDAR information, we've realized that the sedimentation is flat. It's not increasing. Now, that's not to say the Prado Dam doesn't have sedimentation. It has a lot. We have half of what we had in 1941. But what happened? So this is kind of, we started, and the Corps realized this too, saying, oh, we're not losing storage. And it's like, no, we're not. So what happened before 2008? And Sean has some ideas on kind of exactly what happened. So the good news is this, is that we're not losing the storage. It's still remaining the same. So therefore, we can plan for 20, 30, 40 years out in the future without having to do mass sediment removal projects. So Sean, why is it that we kind of see this flattening of the curve, so to speak?
Why is it we don't know. We have some really good ideas. So I will talk about what we do know. We do know that Seven Oaks went online, and went online in 2000. Seven Oaks, it's a big and incredible facility, but it actually holds back water behind a relatively small portion of the overall watershed. But there has been sediment accumulating in Seven Oaks Dam, and that sediment likely would have reached Prado Basin at some point. But probably the bigger story here, and what we expect to be the bigger story here, is the agricultural land and open space conversion. If you've spent some time in the Inland Empire over the last 30, 40 years, the big theme there is development, right? And you look at the warehouses, the homes, and you see all that happen. And when you think about that, and you take a dairy that might have been there before, or an open space land, and what would happen? It rained, water eroded off of there, it carried the sediment into ditches, maybe a creek, and it eventually would have likely found its way into the river and down to Prado Basin. And now you see, look at that picture. You see concrete, you see rooftop, and the water flows into storm drains and into a system that's designed to ensure that there's not erosion, that the water reaches the water body without carrying that same sediment load that it once did. And we can demonstrate. Let's take a look at this. You see Prado Dam here in the bottom left corner. This is in 1996, and you can see the bright yellow outline of Prado Basin. The yellow shaded areas are all agricultural land in the Prado Basin area. Most of that is dairy. Watch what happens when we look at last year. All of that shrinks down to just some smaller pockets of agricultural land. You see all the white rectangles of warehouse roofs. You see all the homes that have been built in, and likely in the future, some of those pockets of agricultural land are going to disappear as well. Same thing, upper watershed. You see Seven Oaks Dam in the upper right corner. You see the yellow shaded areas, and you see them shrink back down from 1996 to 2025. So the story is happening everywhere across the watershed. So I'll conclude here by telling you we're going to be working on a sediment monitoring plan that will continue the use of LIDAR, continue to monitor and keep a close eye on this data trend and ensure its accuracy and see if there are any changes to that. And we're going to include some ground truthing and monitoring on the ground, too, to verify the accuracy of that. So that concludes my presentation. Happy to take any questions.
That's fascinating. Are there any questions at this time? Sure.
So at the beginning of the presentation, you talked about our requirement to remove, 125,000 cubic yards of sediment. With this new information, will we still be required to do that? Or is that something that we can go question that requirement and say, look, we don't need to do that anymore?
Great question. And the short answer to that is we're going to be required to do that sediment removal. And the rationale and the reasoning for that was based on a different methodology for determining what went into that requirement. It's based on the inflow of sediment and carried in the water and the outflow. But what I think is more useful for us is we are going to be negotiating future as we go higher in the basin and as we ask Army Corps to hold back more water in the future, there will be more negotiations with the resource agencies, and this will be a excellent tool for us to try to see if we can influence how sediment obligations are occur in the future.
Okay, thank you.
No questions online? Yes, sir, Director Tran.
With all that sediments, that's a lot of sediments. Where are the sediments going now? Where are they being transported to?
So currently we have, we're mostly just stockpiling on site. We have the small sediment removal of about 1,200 cubic yards. We often have a private contractor that'll come and haul that away. That's a relatively small amount. But the larger 250,000 cubic yards, we don't exactly know where that's going to go. It's going to get stockpiled, and we're working with our beach communities to see if we can identify an opportunity for that to reach those beach communities for beach sand replenishment.
So in the meantime, it's piling up?
It will. We haven't started yet, but that it will
okay.
As soon as we start that project.
All right, very good.
And that material is primarily from the sand trap by the River Road Bridge?
That's right. Well, no, the sand trap is in the middle of the basin, but it's we also do some excavations up by River Road Bridge, but it's mostly going to be coming from the sediment demonstration area, which is in the middle of the Prado Basin.
Okay. Do we own that property that's just adjacent to on the inland side of River Road? Because I've driven across there recently, and I saw the sand area, and I saw some...
Yeah.
Vehicle tracks and things and activities going on there. So that's us.
Yes.
Do we still have contractors that pick that up for free?
We have contractors that pick it up for free. Yes.
Okay.
Usually small. We kind of build a little stockpile and they'll sometimes.
Okay. And they use it for building materials of some sort. Okay. It looks like high quality sand.
It is. You walk out on that set on our sand trap. It looks like you're on the beach.
Don't tell Director Sheldon.
I'm selling it.
Okay. Any other questions at this time?
That's right. Don't forget it, Mr. President.
There you go. Okay. That was an informational item. Thank you very much for the information. Okay. Now we have the Public Affairs Outreach Report.
Okay, thank you, President Bilodeau and members of the board. I think that Zach and Sean, your presentation would be a great future webinar. So I noted that. Okay, so I just have a couple of slides here, or maybe a little bit less than 10, but I'll move through quickly to go over some public affairs outreach highlights. So recently, March 23rd, 24th, and 25th, our general manager, John Kennedy, along with our first vice president, Van Tran, and Alicia Harristy, visited Capitol Hill. So this picture here on the left, John did participate in a briefing along with other passive receivers advocating for an exemption for liability regarding PFAS. So that was very successful on Monday, and then it was followed by meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday with our entire Orange County delegation, either meeting with the member or their staff, along with Calvert's office and some key committees. They continued to advocate for some of our top priorities, which are, of course, PFAS, liability and funding, sediment removal, and Prado as well. So the Water Reuse Conference was also held in March, and just wanted to demonstrate here that OCWD had a strong presence regarding staff. There were a lot of participation from staff in different panels and presentations, so we definitely continue to demonstrate our leadership here. Danny Birch and I did present about GWRS outreach and kind of lessons learned and how we still use the same model in areas like PFAS. So We actually created a toolkit on the OCWD website. This has been something that the Public Affairs Group has wanted to do for a long time. We get so many questions from other agencies worldwide, you know, not only about the engineering, but about the public outreach and education that supported it. So you cannot visit this directly from just the drop-down. You have to have the specific site, but it's already been visited hundreds of times, and so we hope this will be useful to the industry in moving other water reuse projects forward. At the Water Reuse Conference, we also had the opportunity to showcase our leadership through serving GWS water in different forms. So we had coffee, matcha, and beer. Moving on to media highlights. So the GWS does continue to get featured in the media, and we had a recent clip. It was an interview with Peter Annan, who's wrote a book on water recycling and is a former journalist. And he did a podcast really talking about OCWD's leadership in the industry and the GWS setting a global model for water reuse projects. So that podcast alone had about 30 million reach. And for March, we had an 84 million reach with our media clips and mentions of OCWD and our projects. We continue to drive engagement across social media. So Crystal Nettles and staff do a great job on getting interaction with staff, videos with our general manager, really showcasing what happens out in the field and everything behind the scenes that it takes to create a reliable water supply. So the good news is we've had a 25% increase in followers from just last year. So the team is really doing a good job capitalizing on trends. We continue to have 4 webinars a year, and our last webinar was on stormwater capture, so we had about 100 online views so far, and we are getting really positive comments. This was a quote from one of our participants about it being the best topic that he's seen so far, and our featured speakers, from OCWD were Ben and Lisa, and then we were joined by somebody from the Army Corps of Engineers. So we will continue doing that. Wanted to mention also we had a record number in tours in March. I think it had a lot to do with, too, the Water Reuse Conference being in Los Angeles. So we had delegations kind of tack on visits to our facility before, during, and after the conference. We welcome visitors from Australia, Singapore, Switzerland, delegations from Ohio and Washington. So it was a really busy month. We had 33 groups tour in March. And so from January through March, we've already hosted about 1,000 guests at our facility. We also continue to educate on PFAS and through quarterly updates, through our construction outreach, our PFAS Education Center as well. And then some of these Speakers Bureau opportunities as well, they featured PFAS-centric information. This is just a look ahead at some of our upcoming events and Speakers Bureau. Alicia's going to attend a lobby day April 8th to advocate for our OCWD state priorities. We have the festival coming up. We have the Aqua Conference in May. We do have a few speakers from OCWD who will be participating on panels. We have the CAPIO Conference where public affairs staff will be presenting about organizing large-scale events, and we are shortlisted for an award there. And then Mayhul will be attending the Global Water Summit, where we're also shortlisted for the Global Water Award for Public Water Agency of the Year. The festival's coming up, and Crystal did email all of the directors today, there's students from every director service area that will be attending festival. We're going to be welcoming over 6,000 students, so we're super excited. We have a lot of support from all of our retailers and participants in the past. We also have new participants as well. So we're excited to host it at Oak Canyon Park, April 15th and 16th. If any directors have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me or Crystal. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I do have a question. I saw under the caption of photo of the general manager, it says burger trend. What is a burger trend?
What did it say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
What's a burger trend?
did you see the commercial? Was it the McDonald's CEO eating a cheeseburger? And Go ahead, you.
In this day and age, I don't watch TV anymore. It's all on my phone anyways.
It was a trend on social media. So I think it's, you know, staff like Crystal leading the team identify like what's the trends on social today, whether it's burgers, whether it's 12 tons of Kit Kat being stolen and, you know, off a train in Europe. And then we use that opportunity, if we can tie it successfully to water, to kind of reach an audience that we wouldn't have normally reached. So that was the case with John and the burger. And there was a lot of other companies that were doing that, so we kind of hopped onto the trend.
Yeah, the McDonald's CEO, some people thought he didn't look very comfortable eating a cheeseburger. So then the Burger King, was a Burger King CEO, had a commercial loving his cheeseburger, you know. So then they're showing me loving the water, you know. So that was kind of the tie. Yeah.
John's a good sport.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to thank Public Affairs team for doing the tours with Newport Harbor High School and Estancia High School. They were well received, and the kids were appreciative.
Great. Well, thank you for the presentation. Let's see, committee conference meeting reports. Let's see what we have. Are there any directors that like to disclose any meetings they went to at district expense, at which a quorum of the board is present? Hearing none. Sure.
DC trip on March 23rd to the 25th, or 26th, for me at least. But we had a very productive legislative trip to Washington, D.C. The general manager, I think Gina mentioned this. I'll fill in just a little bit of details more on the trip with John Kennedy and also Alicia Haristy, who were there along with our D.C., Washington, D.C. Legislative advocate, Eric Saperstein, who were very helpful and insightful with all the issues on Capitol Hill. And both John and Alicia were great with putting together, along with Eric, putting together a full and productive set of meetings, a schedule of meetings on Capitol Hill. We've met with the staff from both U.S. senators from California, Padilla, and Adam Schiff. On the House side, we've met with members Young Kim, Lou Correa, and David Min, who came by. But we also met with staffers from Congressman Calvert and Derek Tran, and also the committee staff on the Senate side. All of them are environmental professional staff. For the chairman for the committee that deals with water and the environment. I thought it was very productive in terms of what we get with issues affecting directly with OCWD, such as PFAS funding, sediment issues related to the Army Corps of Engineers, which gotta have a shout out, gotta do a shout out to Congressman Woman Young Kim. She was very proactive with her staff, made follow-up calls already and also letters to the Corps to try to get to expedite the permitting process for us for the sediment removal, which affects all the cities, beach cities as well. Also funding for infrastructure with the Lower Santiago Creek that we're working on with the City of Orange, hopefully, with all the funding and Congressman Lou Correa was also a part of that process. So overall, the 2-day legislative work that we, the delegation from OCWD, did, I thought it was very productive. Very, very busy. And there's going to be a lot of follow-up that's going to be needed with all the issues and asked requests that we're having from the federal government, including a lot of money for PFAS funding and infrastructure as well. So thank you once again with John and Alicia and Eric for putting together a very productive and very insightful full trip.
Thank you for that report. I'll just go right into the president's report. Last Thursday, I attended on behalf of OCWD, the Engineering News Record Award of Excellence Gala in New York City. And I was there actually to accept an award on behalf of Chris Olson, who I could see is online tonight, but not in the room. Chris Olson, there you go. There you go. Chris Olson was one of the 25 newsmakers of the year. I got to go up and give a 1-minute speech, which they started playing music to get you off the stage if you went over. And I was thrilled to accept that on Chris's behalf. And when he's back here in the chambers in person, he'll be bestowed his acrylic trophy. And it was a great evening. And Chris deserves a recognition. He's done a great job on the PFAS treatment systems. But he's got 50 more to go. So, and so that is my report. Any other director's reports at this time? General manager's report. Mayor Jung has a report, actually.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to let the board know and the staff know, Mr. President, that I was at the Westminster City Council, honored to accept a certificate of recognition on behalf of the Orange County Water District and our participation and ample sponsorship of their annual Tet Parade. I was honored to do that. Next time I'm in chamber, sir, we'll all take a photo accordingly with the certificate. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, just one minor item. We were asked to send some GWS water back to Washington, D.C. It's going to be used to brew coffee. It's for an event with the EPA and the National Water Reuse Organization. So Mayhol, you put it back train or plane or
FedEx.
Okay.
FedEx.
Yeah.
Wow.
We don't know. Yeah.
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 Black decaf. Okay. Is there a general counsel's report?
Not much to add this evening, Mr. President. No closed session and nothing further to add.
Okay, with that, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance.